Yeah, let's give it up for Liquid IV.
Yeah.com,
baby. Promo code Nooners over there is going to get you 20% off your first order. Rage this weekend, jobless on accident. I feel like it was an accidental rage this weekend.
Yeah.
And I needed some Liquid IV to start off the day. I start every day with a Liquid IV. Our kids are using Liquid IV.
Yes.
They've got the new and improved sugar-free Liquid IVs as well. And Pear is back. Pear is back. That's my favorite. Pear was my favorite there. Big fan. But hanging out, watching sports, hanging out with the friends and all that other stuff. You start boozing, you lose track of time, and then you're like, oh, shit. I need to rehydrate for the week. Got to pop in that Liquid IV. Are you a daily girl? Because I don't see you every single morning all the time.
Yeah, I'm a daily girl. So I do one of the sugar-free grapes or the sugar-free apple, which are my new faves, in 24 ounces.
Okay.
So it is supposed to be just in, they say, like, put a packet in 16 ounces.
16 ounces of water.
And that's going to hydrate you double. I put in the 24 ounce, maybe onesie or twosie.
Yeah.
And go through the day.
Yeah,
it's life changing.
I call it Hydration Monday here on the show because it's one of those things where, again, you go hard over the weekends, you got the kids, you're not eating great, you're boozing with some friends or whatever, and then boom, reset on Mondays, pop in the Liquid IV and you're good to go. But it's a little pouch. That's it. You're ripping open, popping into liquid, 16 ounces or more. And you're good to go. Super easy there. Three times the electrolytes. No artificial sweeteners. 8 vitamins and nutrients. Non-GMO and free from gluten, dairy, and soy. Weekends are for going wild. Have a game plan for Monday with Liquid IV. Grab your Liquid IV hydration multiplier, sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco, or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use the code Nooners at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Superior Hydration today using promo code Nooners at liquidiv.com.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow. I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Ross Patterson Revolution!
Welcome to the Ross Patterson Revolution. We got an old friend on the show. Now you're not old physically. You're still in your prime, right?
Old friend, though.
Yeah, old friend.
What, 17 years?
Old friend. Yeah, it's a long time. You're one of my first friends in Los Angeles.
And an LA friendship. That's like dog years.
Because we all disappear. That's a long time.
That is a long relationship.
It's a long time. People leave. People die.
People all die. A lot of cocaine.
A lot of coke. A lot of friends laid to waste. Or you can lose them to Scientology as well. Lost a couple friends to Scientology.
I think a couple we've lost.
Yeah.
Yeah. They never came
definitely.
Back.
Definitely. No. They've never been seen again.
But actually, I think they can make a documentary later so they can come back
and resurge
your career.
Yeah, I think Leah Remini is going to find them.
Yes. Yes. She's on the hunt right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. We are live from your bar, the Rec Room.
This is my bar, yes.
This is your establishment.
This is my establishment. Eight years now.
Yeah. And what I love is it's 11:30 in the morning and there's a patron drinking at the bar. I love that. Welcome to LA. No, yes. I know it's great. It's great. But the reason I wanted to bring you on the show, besides our friendship aside, is one of the biggest questions I get on all of these shows is,
hey, Ross, man, I really want to open up a bar. I mean, it's my dream. It's my life dream. And you're laughing because I'm sure you get this every single day.
Yeah, and it was the last thing I wanted to do was open a bar.
Yeah, but the reason why I wanted to have you on, you're the only person who's actually done it and had a successful bar or a series of bars.
Yeah.
Everybody else is... lost their ass on bars.
People romanticize it a lot. It's like, hey,
I'm
gonna go watch sports and drink beer and have girls.
Oh, my buddies,
it's gonna be great.
Drink for free. Everybody can drink for free.
Tell my wife I'm going to work and I'm just gonna watch ESPN all day.
I'm just gonna go to a bar. Yeah,
drink beer.
Exactly. And it is far, far from that.
Far, far from that. I actually sometimes don't even come here when a big sporting event's on because I'm like, I'm gonna go stay at home where I don't get bugged. But no, it's
I know,
good.
Right?
It's good. It's an interesting thing.
Yeah, it is. Which we're gonna dive into. Since you're new to the show, we give them some sponsors who actually pay for the shit to be on there, which is crazy.
Crazy.
Crazy. Who people are paying. Ross Patterson. I mean, I get t-shirts. We are legit.
I didn't get a shirt to get on the show.
No, man. You didn't. You will afterwards, though.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. I didn't want two of us wearing shirts like we're twins, like Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito. Just
isn't everybody be
up
like,
here.
Which one's better looking?
Yeah, yeah. And it's gonna be a who wore it better in Us Weekly.
Yeah.
Like I don't want that. Don't want that.
Yeah.
First up at the top of the show on sponsor wise, I'm talking about StraightRazors.com. Don't know if you know that mustache.
Oh, I saw it.
I had a mustache and a perm.
The perm is still kind of holding strong.
Perm's still here.
It's still
a little bit of perm is still here. A lot of people who've been rolling through the LA live shows are like, man, you kind of look like Justin Timberlake early 90s.
Yeah, a little JT. Yeah,
there's
there.
Still a little JT, and I gotta get rid of it. The mustache I got rid of with StraightRazors.com. And they've got some of the finest shaving products in the land. We're talking about the number one ranked aftershave, cologne. They've got a straight razor kit. It looks like it's from Tombstone, the 1800s. And the best aftershave on the fucking planet. Highly recommend straightrazors.com. Go there, type in the promo code REVOLUTION. You get 20% off. Straightrazors.com. Appreciate you being a sponsor. Next up, we got carnivoreclub.co. That's a .co. It's a .co, Timmy.
There's a lot of new dots coming around right now. Yeah.
This is one that I'm sending you for Christmas. This is a bro gift. It's a meat of the month club. They got spicy spreadable pork. They got salami. The finest meats in the land, Tim, is what they got. And it'll be delivered straight to your doorstep.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
That's worth me coming on the show.
And it
right
comes
now.
In like a classy box. And it's actually like unbelievable meat. And we gun through it like the first 2 days we get it. And then... we wait like another 28 days until it gets here. Dead serious.
Can you subscribe it earlier if you want?
Can you get it more frequently? Yeah. You can.
So if I love it, I can just keep getting more and more.
Yes.
I'm better.
Yeah. You're a better human. You're a better human. Go to carnivoreclub.co. Type in the promo code REVOLUTION. You get 20% off. Same as straightrazors.com. Promo code REVOLUTION, 20% off. Same with strikeforceenergy.com, which is our next one. It's the tastiest, tiniest little tin pouch of energy. It goes in beers, liquors, water, anything you can imagine, blends right in. You can kick the can, kids. You can get rid of the can. You know, they're selling bottles to bars now.
I did not know that.
Yes. So what you can do is you just pump in two squirts. That way you don't need cans of Red Bull and shit like that. It's the same. So it's popping up in like every bar in America. This company's fucking huge, actually. They're blowing up. Not Carnivore Club and Straight Razors are huge companies already. StrikeForceEnergy.com, they're a new company that showed up in bars everywhere, so that way you don't have to get cans shipped in. It's two squirts, and that's the same as a vodka Red Bull.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's fucking amazing.
I gotta try it.
Yeah, I know. So it's that one, mostly East Coast now, and it's coming to the West Coast, but they're rad, and you can get it in little packets. Go to StrikeForceEnergy.com, type in the promo code REVOLUTION, you get 20% off. Last but not least, we got a book, Tim. Maybe you heard of it. At Night She Cries While He Rides a Steed, the first ever romance novel for dudes.
Yes.
It's written by the greatest author of this or any generation, Ross Patterson.
He is, and he's great at narrating his book, too.
And
I got the audio
he's
one.
He's super humble. That's what I love about him.
It is.
Ross Patterson is super humble, never talks about himself in the third person.
You wouldn't even know you were talking to Ross Patterson if you were talking with Ross Patterson.
You would just think, oh, my God, I'm just overhearing a conversation about Ross Patterson.
Who is this guy wearing Ross Patterson's shirt? This can't be Ross Patterson.
That can't be Ross Patterson,
no.
But it is. It's
he never wears his own shirt. his own name on it.
But he is. But he is. Because we got these. We got these t-shirts for sale. RossPattersonRevolution.com. Go to Barnes & Noble. Go to any bookstore everywhere. Get a nice Chick Craswell while he rides a steed. BarnesandNoble.com, Walmart.com, Amazon.com. Everywhere. Now that that's out of the way, Timmy, I'm going to stretch it out. I'm going to stretch it out and get in.
Let's get in it.
Let's talk about how we first met.
Mm.
We're not going to say what year it is. We can't say the year.
We're not gonna
date ourselves. We were young men.
We were on the come up. Yes, on the come up at
somewhere in the 2000s.
Yeah,
the 2000s.
In the lower end of the 2000s. I believe I was actually your waiter of all things.
Yes,
at Saddle Ranch.
At Saddle Ranch.
Yeah,
we used to go to Saddle Ranch. That was the first and only sports bar in Los Angeles at the time.
Yeah.
So we were there. Fuck every. 2-3 days a week? What would you say?
And at the time, I think you were a working actor and I was a working waiter. So
yes.
That's
working waiter.
There's two levels of LA.
You were killing it at Saddle Ranch.
So. I was. Yeah, Saddle Ranch was an interesting time in my life. It was like a carryover from college, I believe.
Yeah. But, like, you know, it was on Sex and the City. And
oh, it was everywhere.
It was everywhere. Yeah. So everybody who came to Los Angeles came to Saddle Ranch.
That was a spot because there was only Saddle Ranch. And then there was Miyagi's, and there was Bublin and Dublin's, which, you know.
Yeah, Bubba, dude, Dublin's was the jam.
That was a spot. That was early Hollywood. That's everybody used to go.
That was when it was the funnest, though.
Yeah, it was when people,
like, in all seriousness,
hung out Sunset Strip all day. There'd be a line down the road.
God,
yeah.
That was a blast. But, like, I remember, fuck, I'm not to name drop, but a friend of ours opened up for Toby Keith. And so Toby gets in town. He's like, hey, man, we're going to party with Toby tonight. I was like, great. Where do you want to go? Saddle Ranch. First thing out of his mouth, I was like, God damn, really?
Saddle Ranch, man.
I seen it on TV, man. It's Sex and the City, you know? Yeah. A big call, you know? I was like, all right, cool.
That place was nuts.
Yeah. How crazy was it?
It was crazy. When I got hired there, I literally just moved to LA and I needed a job. And somebody was like, go to this place. Actually, I went to Dublin to try to get a job, and they told me to get lost. And they go across the street to Miyagi's. They're having, like, an open call. And, dude, it was, like, hundreds of people.
Down the block. Yeah.
Yeah, auditioning just to try to get a job.
To get a job.
Yeah.
And did you have to bring a headshot? Because I know a lot of the restaurants require a headshot now.
They do now. Then it was, like, I just, you know, we didn't have Snapchat and everything. So we got, earlier in the.
Earlier in the millennial. Yeah.
I sat there for, like, literally 2 to 3 hours waiting because I was, like, so late to get in, and people were just like, this is stupid, nobody's hiring. And then I walked in and there was a woman there, and she basically just looked us up and down and was like, all right, you're hired, wear jeans and a tight jeans and a shirt and a hat. And I was like,
kind of thought
it was a gay bar,
dressing like a cowboy. Then that was the theme.
I didn't know, and I rolled in, it was all guys. She hired all, like, good looking just guys.
Of course she did.
Not saying I somehow fit that profile at the time.
You're a good looking lad.
But man, the thing worked because it was all good looking guys, and then women just showed up there all day long because of the guys.
Tons of women.
And then you get the women, the guys came, and
and it was endless, like every night. It didn't matter, but Monday through Sunday it was packed. Full of people, and I will say this, like, as a new actor to town, it was cheap, so you could get a. I remember we used to get those carafes.
Oh,
of
God, those things.
Long Island iced teas.
Yeah,
you got two carafes and it was like $8 a piece,
cookies.
Or whatever it was. Yeah, and you're good.
Yeah,
like, you're good for the night.
Then you're on the bull wrestling.
Yeah, and if you bought a girl, because you could buy. That was one place where you could actually buy a girl a drink and be like, hey, no, I got this one, because it was only $8. If you went across the street to, like, the Mondrian, it was like $20 for mine, and you're like, whoa, no. Let's go take this over to Saddle Ranch.
I don't like all the Hollywood bougie shit. Let's go to Saddle Ranch.
And that was always the line, too, of like, oh, God. You know, I hate that bougie shit.
I hate that club
I'm always just going to Saddle Ranch.
Also, you know, the few clubs are there. If you rolled with, like, four of your boys, you weren't getting in.
No.
Yeah, it was.
No.
It had to be, like, one girl.
If you didn't have 80 girls with you and you weren't famous, you could not get into the clubs.
No. So Saddle Ranch is the jam.
You were killing it.
Yeah.
How long did you work there?
I worked there 2 years.
Two years
I was there, which was in Saddle Ranch world, which is probably about five.
Right. Yeah. More than that.
It was crazy. Yeah.
What was the craziest shit you saw at Saddle Ranch? How many people broke their arm on the bull riding? Because they still have that bull, right?
They still have the bull. Like, I've seen broken arms. I've seen, like, at the time when they first mailed it, they didn't realize there was, like, sheep metal that was sticking out that they didn't know. And I saw somebody try grabbing it one time and, like, came out and there was just blood out of the arm.
You're kidding.
We had the best thing about Saddle Ranch was, like, the sheriffs were always like getting free food anytime
sure.
they went there.
Sure.
So we had like carte blanche if we were an employee at Saddle Ranch and like a sheriff pulled us over anywhere. You know, I remember plenty of times like, oh, we work at Saddle Ranch. They're like,
Oh, you're good.
I mean, there was one time a huge fight broke out. We shut down Sunset Boulevard. I mean, it had to be like 40 people, cuffs. I mean, it was
no
like,
shit.
Yeah, it was like, it was literally an Old West style brawl. It was like everybody was going at it. And I mean, employees with customers, which spilled out into Sunset Boulevard. I mean,
nobody knew
who it was. That was a pretty, it's pretty wild fight. And the bullfighter, not the bullfighter, the bull, guy running the bull that time. Like I remember he shattered his entire wrist over some dude's face, like out there.
Necessary. Dude, Hollywood fights get wild, by the way.
That was when there were still fights. People get shot. Yeah. It was like, you'd actually fight, which was kind of, It was crazy. It was crazy.
Yeah. Because we used to go to Powerhouse all the time as well. Yeah. Another, but that was the Powerhouse to dive. Like, we knew what we were getting into.
No, this was still like, you know, this was Christina Aguilera get snuck in.
When she
was 18, we had to sneak her in so she could drink.
Yeah.
That was the time DMX was hanging out there. Like, always.
Which I really want. Which I really want. Yeah. I want to have a crab of Long Island iced tea. So you finish up Saddle Ranch. And then what happens? Because you moved here to be an actor, right?
I moved here to be an actor, and I consider myself like the Daniel Day-Lewis of guest stars.
Of NCIS?
Yeah, of NCIS.
You've been on NCIS a few times.
Twice, yeah. Yeah. Both two shows. They call me back two different shows.
Yeah.
So I do a guest star about once every 6 years, I think.
That's all you need.
Yeah, it's all I need. And, you know, you're set. That residual comes in.
For life.
Like, you're good.
That $80, you're good for life.
It's good. Yeah, man. You're like, those are nice residuals, you know.
So after that, what makes you decide, hey, man, I think I could open up my own bar and I think this would be awesome?
You know, I was always working for people and I always kind of thought they were idiots.
Yeah.
Larry Saddle Ranch had a great philosophy, but like I always kind of felt like I kind of knew more than what was going on. So I opened up Saddle Ranch, or then I went to like the nightclubs. I opened up a bunch of nightclubs, like Ledoux, Element, big clubs.
Shit, dude, Ledoux back in the day Ledoux was the jam. I had some fun times.
I didn't open up a Ledoux, but I was over there with Element, which was right next to it, and we all knew the same.
Because they were connected.
So being involved in all that, and honestly, it was acting was going however well it was going.
Yeah.
And I was, the 2000s were getting closer to the 2010s.
And you're like, all right, I gotta start.
I always kind of set myself a little benchmark. And then the writer's strike happened about 8 years ago. So I kind of was in the point at that time looking for something else. And I'd saved, you know, it's funny because like bartending in LA, you know, as long as nobody the IRS is listening, it's like you make a shit ton of cash.
Shit ton of cash.
Especially in the good days.
I remember you were rolling in the deep and it was just like, yeah.
And it was crazy. It's almost like it wasn't even real. Because I remember like in the nightclub days, I remember if we would walk out with like $700, we'd be like, it's okay.
Yeah. I told people all the time, one of the best jobs I ever had was I was a bouncer in college. And it was like, dude, shit ton of cash. And it was like, people don't understand
like, I knew
you don't report it.
People making $150,000 a year just stupid money.
So did you take that money then and open up your own bar? Did you save it?
I saved a good portion of it, yeah. And I went around, and I'd been living in the Valley since day one.
Sure.
And Studio City. And I kind of got, basically, we were always driving over to Hollywood, so I was like, why is there never anywhere in Studio City?
Yeah. Yeah, that was my problem, too, because, like, Sunset is a DUI trap and a ton of cops and all that stuff, and it's like, it was a blast, but,
and
like,
it was hard to get a cab at the time.
Yes.
It's not like
And there
Uber.
Wasn't, you know, yeah. there was no Ubers or anything, so you couldn't get cabs, so it was always a risk.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was like, fuck, why is there no cool sports bars? And then, boom, the draft pops up.
Yeah, that was it, 2008. And right after we signed the paper on it, it was... The market crashed.
Yeah.
Literally, I was like, oh, this is smart.
Yeah.
It's the only one of the worst economic things we have in the last however long. But it worked out. You know, we opened it up. As far as financing it goes, I kind of took a page out of Kevin Smith's playbook, and I had some money and I had a lot of credit cards.
Right.
And I kind of just budgeted. And
that's what you got to do, though. That's what it is.
Well, funny enough, right after I signed the paperwork from the old owner, to, because I kind of agreed to, you know, I'll pay this much and then, you know, we'll sort it out over time. Literally after I signed it, a location scout walked in and he wanted to shoot a porn here.
Are you serious?
I swear to God.
He wanted to shoot a porn in this bar?
And we were like, yeah. And we're like, he's like, you know, it's kind of simulated sex. I'm like, wait, is this what the fuck are you shooting here? And it was one of those.
Whenever they say simulated sex, that means full penetration,
yeah,
no condoms.
It was one of those Skidamax porns at the time.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So they paid me like $30,000 to
rent the bar out.
Yeah, because this is like, it was still the old place, so I knew we were gonna gut it all inside. So I'm whatever.
So you're like, yeah, fuck, whatever, come on the floor.
Yeah, whatever happens, we're gonna change it anyway. And
we'll mop it up.
And at the end of the day, if a customer comes in and recognizes it, then he's calling himself out for watching the porn anyway, so we're like, nobody's gonna be like, "Yo, I was at home." Just,
hey, man, is this casting couch? Where you're like, "Whoa, are you sitting at home watching porn?"
Yeah, are you watching porn? Yeah, checking this bar out. Did you jerk off to this bar?
So for $30K for how long?
7 days.
Shit,
they pay very well, by the way.
That is great money.
Yes. You know, I thought about just making it a porn location and not even opening a bar.
Just be like, hey, you guys need a bar to fuck in?
Yeah,
just putting out Craigslist ads.
Yeah, let's.
You guys in a bar to fucking
let's do it.
So you open it up. They pay a porn.
They paid,
$30,000. So that helped.
That helped a lot.
And then how do you get people to come into the bar? Because I mean, I knew you, which is how I was like, all right, cool. I'm gonna come in, bring my buddies, and do all this stuff. But from the outside, it's just a huge sign that says the draft, and it's kind of a guess.
It's a guess because it looks it's very deceptive.
Nondescript. Yeah.
You're like, oh, there's a bar there.
Yeah,
and it's deceptively a lot larger. Once
you get
inside.
It is, because once you walk in, you're like, oh shit, this place is huge.
This is a real bar. Yeah. You know, back then when we opened it, I saw a need for it there. And during the whole time we were doing construction, we did a lot of advertising and you know, basically signs, flyers, things like that, which 8 years ago, it's a whole different ball game now. You know, the way you can promote online with
social media.
Yeah, the social media.
Social media is everything now, yeah.
You can generate such a buzz, which my other restaurant actually came to backfire on us because we did the whole social media approach, and it fucking destroyed us the first day like we opened. Like, thousands of people rolled in. And
well, that's what you want, but nobody's ever prepared for it.
No, nobody ever prepared for it. I remember my chef was, like, crying at the end of the day because he
wanted to quit. Yeah. He's got the belt around his neck.
Literally, I was just ready to shut the door. It's like, just stop coming, people.
Please stop coming.
So, you know, we opened at an interesting time because, basically, it was very economically, it was a horrible time. But people don't lose their vices, so people still drink and come out.
Oh, yeah. Shit, they're probably drinking even more since the market crashed.
Yeah, crashed.
They were pissed off about it.
I did some aggressive specials. I remember my very first day to get people in, because, you know, we didn't have the budget to actually, or the money. It was all me and my friends doing all the work here. And, like, I had a guy who was a studio grip electrician do my electrical work. I mean, it was very under the table, everything we were doing. I mean, it couldn't be more of a mom and pop sort of thing. But basically, we... sorry, lost my train of thought.
No, it's all right.
Where were we at?
You hired a grip and an electrician. There's some loud voices in the back.
Oh, the promotion. So back to it. So I remember we sat there, and our very first day, I put these signs out, and I was telling everybody, because we opened up opening day, like, kind of third week in the NFL season.
Yeah.
So we're like, and that morning, we were promoting it that, like, $5 pitchers.
Sure.
You know, so I was just trying to get anybody to come through the door. And I remember, like, I stayed up all night. We were still hanging these TVs. I was literally plugging these TVs in at, like, 9 in the morning. And I was just like, went home and I sat there, and, you know, it was just my staff, and, like, nobody was there. And literally, I had no money left. I couldn't even afford, like, a Snickers on the way home. Like, my credit cards were all maxed out. I was just broke.
Did you think it was going to fail? Like, did you think the bar was going
to
fail?
Yeah. I mean, I had a backup plan just to flee to Mexico. Like, that was kind of my, because they're a risk. And I was like, at the time, I just started dating my wife. So I didn't have a whole lot of, you know, people counting on me, so I was like, whatever. If it sucks, I'll just flee.
That's it.
You know, do what everybody else is doing right now.
Yeah.
So I literally went home, and I think, like, I cried a little bit and shut my phone off, and, like, and I fell asleep because I'd just been exhausted from, like, trying to do this 2 month open. And then when I woke up, probably around noon, I just see, like, all these missed calls from my manager, and, you know, like, where the fuck are you? What's going on? And I drive over, and the place is just packed. And I look around, and I'm like, oh my God, it's Pat. And I look around, everybody's just drinking $5 pitchers. I was like, fuck. So I like yell, I'm like, dude, why didn't you stop the special?
Yeah.
Because you never told me when to stop it. So literally, we were packed and we were probably not making that much money because we were just giving away huge pitchers.
Sure, but on the flip side, everybody probably knew who you were then at that point.
We became known. And then the Lakers had their run. And I started off with, because I started in a college bar. So I started off trying to do like mimicking kind of. More of a college type atmosphere, kind of what, because LA is a lot of transplants, as you know. So We all kind of crave things that like from back home. So that was the idea.
Yeah.
And then we did, I did dollar beers during every Laker game too. So I went really aggressive.
Yeah. So, and the Lakers were great.
Lakers were awesome. That was like,
that was the Kobe.
That was the year. Yeah. We were making money hand over fist right there during the Lakers. That was when they won, lost, and then beat Boston.
So
the dollar beer specials, that kind of put us on the map. Like everybody knew like that was a spot. So you
during
in,
Lakers games.
Yeah. So you come in for a Lakers game, it was like you couldn't even get in. And we're the only kids in town. So it
you were the only sports bar.
Yeah. So it made it, it just worked out very well, you know, and it was a great formula. And it was crazy. It was nuts here for the longest time.
It's crazy. A lot of people who want to open bars, how do they fail so quickly? Because it's, dude, literally, you are the only person I know. That has a successful bar. Everybody else has failed. Why is that?
I think a few reasons. I think one, you know, kind of reality TV romanticizes it now so much.
Yes.
Like everybody thinks I make great
bar rescue.
Yeah, I make an amazing hot dog at home. I'm gonna open up a hot dog restaurant, throw some beer in it.
Yeah.
Bar rescue is such but
trying to get through a liquor license.
LA
the permits.
Yeah.
It's a nightmare.
Los Angeles is the worst. Like opening a business here. I know people that own bars and restaurants other places in the country and they're like, oh yeah, let's go in, let's get it. But LA, just the hoops you have to jump through with the city is, and listen, I made a shit ton of mistakes because I never opened a bar either. I thought I was a bartender waiter that just thought I knew how to do it better. So,
right.
And there's that old joke that the mistakes you learn the most are the ones you pay for, which is what we paid a lot of money, you know, like, one of them was during the time nobody was showing UFC fights back then either. It was just kind of like, you know, they're bringing it back Dana White. And I'm like, I want to do UFC fights. And there was this whole thing with the previous owner that had like this DirecTV box and everything like that. And so I was still doing stuff through him because I was still trying to get things transferred over and we were busy. And so I would call him and like for packages and go order the UFC fight. Okay. And you know, it was $45. So I was like, this is simple. Why not?
No bigs.
A year later, all of a sudden these lawsuits start showing up. This freaking guy before I switched over had a commercial account. So that's why you're only paying $45 for the fight.
Shut the fuck up.
I got hit for about $30,000 in lawsuits for pirating, basically, because I wasn't paying the correct price.
Did you have to settle?
Oh, yeah. I had to pay it. Yeah. There's really no way to argue it. I mean, they were actually, because they kept hitting me fight after fight after fight. Hey, it's us again. I was like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
All right, so eventually, you know, we switched all that. But on the flip side, if I was paying what we pay now for UFC fights, which are thousands of dollars,
yeah,
you know, I wouldn't have been able to build up the business. I never would have taken that risk to make it like the bar where everybody comes to watch UFC fights. So basically all the money I generated, basically I just gave back to their lawyers. But at the same time, in the long term.
But it built your brand.
It built a brand. It built a brand.
Because a lot of people don't know this at home because they think, oh, when Mayweather fights, why can't it be free at the bar?
No.
Is this basic cable? When a UFC fight, why can't it be free at the bar? One of the bars I worked at in college got popped for that as well, where they used to have, and I don't know if they still have that now, where they bring representatives into the bar.
Oh, they investigate. Yeah,
yes.
They investigate.
And
they
show up and they're like, hey, are you showing this fight? Great, you're going to get fucking sued. I remember our bar owner back in the day, he got popped for 10 grand because it was a smaller bar. It's based on like seating and space.
Seating and like I remember the Mayweather Pacquiao fight. They were charging us based on your seating. They were charging you $35 a head. So whatever your fire occupancy was, they were charging you $35 per that. Yeah. So
how packed were you for that fight?
We were really packed. Yeah. Yeah.
It was, and what were you charging to get in?
We started at 25, but then we were like, we minimum all the tables so people actually had to pay to sit down.
Smart, yeah.
And then when the fight started, we were up to $50, and the fight was horrible too. I almost felt bad.
That was the worst fight I've ever seen.
Yeah. So when
I ordered it at home, and it was $100 on pay per view.
Yeah.
And I was pissed off that I paid. I was like, fuck. That's like nine cable bills in one.
Yeah,
and I
know.
Just watched the worst fight of my
life.
Yeah,
I was sitting there. Yeah, but I mean, people were rolling in last second, so we're like $50.
Yeah,
you know, and we had all the windows blacked out because they were trying to look in. We're like, yeah, no, that's not happening.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was.
yeah. The other thing that I want to touch on too is, you know, depending upon what city you live in, can also determine how successful your bar is because of like a sports bar, for example. Can you tell the audience what the difference is when the Lakers and the Dodgers have great teams versus when they have shitty teams?
Like, oh, it's
what is your how much does that kill your monthly sales?
Annually, I say a good Lakers versus a bad Lakers is about $250,000.
Oh God. Oh no!
That's gross, not net. That's gross.
That's gross.
Gross sales.
Gross,
yeah,
all the way around. Yeah. I mean, that's just gross to hear that.
That is gross to hear that.
Oh, my
but
God.
LA is a horrible sports town, though. Too, like, they're so used to winning.
Well, when the Lakers are good,
they love you. But
they love you, and
if
the Lakers are terrible right now, yeah, people fucking.
It's been like 4 or 5 years. We have Laker games on now, and it's like we don't even realize they're playing. We're like, used to be we scheduled 4 Laker games. Now
yeah,
we're like, oh, they're on. All right, well, whatever.
Yeah, you're like, yeah, well, Magic's running the team. Maybe it'll be better.
Yeah, hopefully Magic turns it around.
What about Dodgers are good? Do you get a decent Dodgers crowd? Or are
we
they
do
still fair weather fans?
They're good in the beginning, then they kind of taper off during the summer, then the playoffs come, and
then
they get knocked
back
out in first round or second round.
Yeah.
And then
that has an effect on a bar where it's like, you know, if you're at home and you're thinking about opening up a bar in a different city and you're like, all right, my team is shitty. Like
I think something you got to look at. If it is a sports bar, that's definitely sports. And my whole thing was I never really wanted to create a sports bar when I did it. I gave it kind of the sports logo and I put a bunch of TVs so it was accessible to sports. But I wanted sports to kind of be the icing on the cake. I wanted to create a place where people came when sports weren't on because otherwise you are living and dying by sports.
Right. Right.
And that, and you know, and that's a, you know, you want to talk about gambling. It's like you go to Vegas. Yeah.
Fuck.
You know,
you would have a better shot making more money in Vegas betting on that.
Yeah. I remember during the Laker playoffs, you know, in Boston, I'd be like, okay, I want 5 games, but I don't want them to lose. So it's like, okay, if we can get to 6, but if they get knocked in 6, we don't get the next series. So it's like, so you want to stretch it out as far as you can, but then again, they lose a series and then you lose all that money for the next thing. And so That's the thing too is you know, and kind of the demographic where you are is it's, you know, LA, especially this area, there's a lot of actors, there's a lot of just kind of younger people that don't have a lot to do that will go out, and especially nightlife and things like that. So you kind of really got to look at where you're at and kind of, you know, where it goes out. You know, I wanted to open this place in a place that was pretty much like family residential because everybody has kids and they're not going out and playing beer pong or getting stupid.
And there's also like nobody's raging or fist fighting in here. Like, you know,
no, I mean, we had our share of those back in the day.
Yeah.
And you know, we had to change our format actually, because what came to bite us in the ass was we were actually got so popular that it started bringing in a whole different demographic that we didn't want in here.
Right.
And it got kind of rowdy. And it started pushing out the good clients that I had here.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden we did this 180 that it was like, whoa. It forced us to close down and rebrand it and rename it, which is the Rec Room now. And that was part of the reason.
Is that why you see a lot of bars and restaurants close down and then reopen under a different name and kind of remodel a little bit?
Sometimes, to keep it fresh. I mean, right now there's such a trend which I'm kind of banking that it's going to go away because it's such a trend with the, you know, the mixologist and, you know, the 13-minute cocktail it takes me to drink.
And that's the thing, man. Like, I like those places because one of my favorite bars in Wilmington is a place called the Blind Elephant.
Yeah.
And it's great, but it's the same way where every drink takes like 15 minutes to get. So, you know, you go in, you order fucking 2 or 3 at a time just so you don't have to go back to the fucking bar.
Yeah.
You're just like, I can't go back
there. And out here, you're paying $19 for a drink for those.
Yeah. I mean, and you're waiting on top of it.
And you're waiting.
I would imagine as an owner, you can't turn around a lot of drinks fast enough either, so you're going to lose profit.
Yeah. There's that whole, like, what is it? That whole KISS mentality that everybody tells you is like, keep it simple, stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually holds very true here. And I mean, in all bars and restaurants. And when I opened my restaurant, it was funny because I didn't want to be a bar owner anymore. Like after 5-6 years, I was like, you know, I want something classier.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to be a bar owner. It's like, you know, it's just people pissing everywhere.
It's just,
it's a college bar. So I opened a restaurant and that was huge. And it had like 132 employees. And but it's just a whole different set of problems. It was like, I loved the bar because I went back to, because it was so food driven and everybody thought they were a chef and everybody, you know,
sure.
when they made it at home that, you know, this is how I make it at home when I watch, you know, guy, whichever one of those, you know, Thomas Keller.
Yeah.
And then I'd come back to the bar and people would be like, oh, you guys got wings? I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
You got a game? Yeah. Oh, perfect.
Perfect. Yeah. Awesome. I'm good.
Just give me a pitcher of beer and go. I was like, oh, this is so relaxing.
Yeah.
So I had to go to one place to really appreciate what I have for the other one right now.
Right.
The bar. And so I definitely like the bars more. It's a little simpler. And we're actually trying to even make our place a little divier now because L.A. especially like
this, that's the trend.
The trend right now is like this, you know, everything has three names, like, you know, food, fresh, you know, crab, fair. Like they all got these little like words.
Eat, pray, love.
Yeah. They got these stupid words, a little plus them each other, you know, and they're like sit, drink, you know, think, whatever.
Think.
Yeah.
It's like the last place I want to think is at a fucking bar.
What a stupid fucking names they have going on. So. I think it's going to come back to people just looking for like a bar to hang out and like where I can get a Jack and Coke and, you know, some wings to be done with it and not have to sit there for 20 minutes and watch you explain.
Yeah, and watch somebody twist.
Yeah.
I'm grinding orange peels into your thing. Yeah. Isn't this, it's like magic.
And watch how you like, you know, did on a retreat with some Buddhist monk somewhere in, you know, some temple and like you learn how to make the perfect, you know, cocktail. That's kind of where we are as far as trying to. And we have amazing food and amazing.
No, you do. I eat food here every time I'm here.
Yeah, and amazing, like, you know, we have all the rise. We have the copper mugs for the, you know, everybody that wants to look cool with their copper mug.
Yeah. But for the Moscow mules.
Yeah, but we're not trying to be so upfront with it or not like in your face with it. And I think that's kind of where people, hopefully where they're going right now, because these other bars are just, everybody just copies each other. So if you are the first to an area, probably to circle back to the original question.
You really do. Yeah.
If you could be the first for some sort of concept in the area, then that owns credence for itself right there. I mean, that's going to help you along the way because you're different. But then everybody just starts copying, and that's kind of what happens. You know?
It's what happens in everything.
Yeah.
In life. If something's successful, everybody's going to try to copy it. Usually you go back to the original.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. Like, it's kind of the first to market sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, and I think a lot of people with bars and restaurants, too, that think to open it up, they'll sit there and do the numbers, but it's hard to understand the actual profit you make, too. Like, bars, you're going to make a lot larger profit. But a restaurant, I mean, a dialed-in restaurant,
yeah,
like, they're probably making 10%. So the margins are really fucking low.
That's why restaurants fail.
They fail a lot because of that. Because
and everybody that is because everybody wants to, a lot of people want to own a restaurant too. And I'm like, no, don't do it. If you're only making 10%,
that's a lot of work.
That's a grind for 10%.
That's a lot of work, you know. And that's why you're seeing such a fast casual sort of thing come in, like the Chipotle style restaurants, because Chipotle's can, you know, when individual stores, obviously, when you look at their numbers, it's based on, you know, all however many thousands of Chipotles they have now, so it's skewed based in demographics, but you could be 15-20% at a Chipotle,
yeah,
because the way it's designed. Bars, you can be 20%, you know. Nightclubs, you can be 25% plus.
Yeah, hey, come on in. By the way, we're just doing an interview, so it doesn't matter.
These guys
party. yeah, party. It's a live show. You can do that on a live show.
So a lot of people don't, and that was the other thing with my restaurant. Like at the end of the day, I was working my ass off and was barely seeing, you know, 3-4% on that, you know, because it was such food driven. So I think a lot of people trying to open, you get romanticized by the numbers. You're like, oh, I'm doing $3 million. I could do $3 million.
Yeah.
But then if you're looking at 2-3%, 3 million, you know, you actually have to take a hard look at the numbers and kind of step away from it a little bit and like don't just get blinded by the gross sales because that's a fatal mistake a lot of people realize. They don't actually realize all the extra costs that add to it. And there's a ton, especially in this.
A ton.
Yeah, labor is a huge. I mean, that's your biggest killer right there. Labor is 1,000% the biggest killer for
restaurants
and bars.
Yeah. I when you see shows like Bar Rescue, like
fake.
Fake, right?
Fake as shit.
And how irritating is that to watch that type of shit?
It's really fucking irritating. I actually know
doing what you do, where you're just like, come on,
these
man.
Fucking guys. Yeah, I know. And it's like, what's the old thing, those who can't do teach, is that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I know a lot, I've seen a lot of these people, like, yeah. they're like guests, you know, like these bottle service hosts and people that have been on the show that are like, oh, I'm a, you know, I know how to do this and that. And I'm like, oh my God, you're just a fucking
It's crazy.
Drunk.
Because I watched them and I'm like, man, you're.
They've
like,
been sued a few times and I'm not going to say who, but I know.
Get out of here.
Yeah, I know.
Over what?
Over just the shit they've done and how they've actually made the businesses worse after they've left. Because they just go get extras. I mean, that's what they do. They come in, they give you some bullshit thing.
Hey, and this bar's packed in your town.
Yeah, hey, there's a lot of extras that need money. So
they just
fill it up and they do it for the shoot. And, you know, they force them to hire people. They make up. It's like anything else. It's all scripted. They make up these scenarios. So it's really not that great. But,
That's crazy.
It fucking drives me nuts. That then they're always like driving around looking for people trying to get on the show.
Have they asked you? Have they approached you? Like, hey, do you want to?
When it was a draft, they approached us. Yeah, a few times. Yeah, towards the end of the draft, they were like,
and you're like, come on.
They did a bar down the road here. They did.
I could only imagine if that guy came in and started yelling in your face.
I'd be like,
you'd knock him clean out and just be like, yeah.
This is some good TV here. Probably a great episode, actually.
Oh yeah, it would be a really great. They would never air it. I can tell you that.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
They could never air it. So, what would be your best advice for somebody at home who's realistically trying to open up a bar? Where you're like, hey, like, honestly.
Honest advice is do your homework and then do your homework and do your homework more. And when I mean that is like, don't just. Like before I got this place, I was almost ready to get another bar down the road that would have been a disaster. I mean, I was like,
really?
To that point. Yeah. And I was like late in one night, I drove around. I'd never even been in this place before. You know, I'm like, I'm going to pop in.
Sure.
And all of a sudden I walked in. It's like, oh shit, this is the actual place I wanted. So you got to do a lot of research and
location. When you think and by the way, because you have parking here, which is
parking.
Nobody has parking in LA.
Yeah. Nobody has parking in LA. I remember when one of the things we were doing for restaurants, because I was before I opened the bar, we were getting ready to do. My buddies had these little pizza places that we were about ready to open up.
Sure.
And one of the things he used to tell me to do was I would go around other neighborhoods or like basically I would find where your client base is going to be. So I would sit at different places nearby or next door and whatnot. And I'd just sit there all day long and just count. When I opened my other restaurant, we would just go to all the nearby restaurants that were close to us and we would go through their lunch. And this is something I recommend anybody to do. We would count out.
You're counting customers?
Yeah, count customers. Yeah. Because I know, my thing is to steal their clients, you know? So if there's a restaurant or a bar or something that's like a few blocks away, not too far away, or if you're somewhere near foot traffic, you know, we're counting just to see how many people go by and like how, okay, so we know there's a need. We know there's a lot of people. I know this place, you know, three blocks away has a 30-minute wait for lunch every day. So it's like.
That's smart. I would have never.
See, you almost kind of in a weird way piggyback, like we said, copy people. You use what other people are doing, and you start seeing. And if you see all the restaurants around you for lease, you know, are always going up, then there's something bad about that area. Unless you create the next Chipotle or something where people
drive a chain. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, unless you create something, but that something so new that everybody has to have it. Most people right now are really for convenience and I'm talking more in like a restaurant sort of thing right now.
Sure.
So unless your food is so amazing and you understand the numbers, I would definitely you got to survey your area and then you need to like figure out what it's going to cost you. And then you got to add about another 25% because it never actually.
I know. It's never that number you thought it was. Same with independent movies,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah.
It is never the number you think it. You're always going to go over budget on something.
Exactly. And, you know, something that helps, especially if it's your first place, you've got to be creative, you know. And the point I'm talking about, like, shit's always broken. You know, things are, like, especially this place. This place has been here 50 years. So it's like an old car. So you're either.
Fridge, air conditioning.
Yeah. So. And some of the stuff you have to pay for, but as creative as you can get and as like as handy as you are, like it just saves you money in the beginning.
Because sure.
Honestly, people think you need to, you know, we got lucky our first year and I'm not, you know, the Lakers win a national championship. I got lucky. I mean, I did. I knew it was there, but I didn't know the Lakers were going to go that far that year.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So a lot of it is like kind of you think it out right and a lot of it is a little bit of luck. And, it, you know, sometimes it goes your way, sometimes it doesn't. But you really need to. Sit down and figure out your cost and plan for about losing money for about a year. And
right.
It's bad to say that, but hopefully it doesn't, but at least if you know it does, then you're prepared for it, because it takes about a year for a lot of places to start actually, you know, making money, yeah, getting in the black. And, yeah, that, and that's, I think a lot of people fail within 6 months because they don't actually, they think right when they open the doors, people are going to come in, you know, it's not
flooded with customers,
yeah, you know, and unless you're a genius social media marketer and you have something so unique and a concept, it's going to be, you know, I know a restaurant in San Francisco, my buddy was managing, and they opened it down here. And they would have a
Did it do well in San Francisco?
It was killing it in San Francisco. Yeah. But it was, but they thought they were just going to rely on the name, and they put it down here. And like San Francisco, they'd have a line, you know, 50, 60 people deep every lunch. And they didn't last like 6 months because they didn't do the research. They were downtown in a San Francisco area. It was a lot of foot traffic, a lot of people going for quick lunches. It was a fast thing. Then they put it in this new like mall complex it built out here that people don't drive to the malls for lunch. They don't go to try to get it. So it... They didn't, they fell away from what was making them succeed, and they didn't do the research on the area, kind of, and they got, oh, this is going to be such a beautiful place built.
And
they
it tanked,
didn't,
huh?
Yeah, it tanked. It didn't even last like 6 months. And so, but even the best places fail too. So you really, you really just got to do the numbers, do the math, you know, and I always joke around that I need to write a book about like, you know, what not to do when opening a bar. Cause I think if there's a mistake to be made, I've made it. I mean, I've
yeah,
made it.
But I don't think any successful, you know, bar, restaurant, company, if you don't make mistakes, you don't learn from your failures,
you
know, then, you know, you'll get burned eventually later on down the road if you don't have some kind of,
yeah. And it's being able to just kind of take everything in stride. And, you know, another thing, if you're trying to do a restaurant, you know, it's figuring out food is your, you know, for us, food, you know, we don't make a ton of money off food, but food is something we do to keep people kind of drinking, sort of thing. And then getting creative with your food items where you can have different items, but you're still using essentially the kind of the same ingredients. You're just remaking them. So that way, because if I got this, you know, whatever one dish, but all those ingredients are just there and they're not being used for other things, and then I'm just wasting money in food, because if I don't sell the shitload out of this one dish, then what's the point of even having it there?
Yeah.
So you really got to like look at your numbers and make sure everything's ironed out and be there.
Yeah, you got to be there.
Plan on being there.
A lot. Your wife is going to hate you.
Yes.
You're going to be spending a lot less time with your family because it requires so many hours, and people don't realize that either, where it's like,
no, it's nonstop. And it's...
Because I've seen you here as early as 7 a.m., and I've seen you as late as here as 2 a.m. shutting down. And it's like, I don't think I've ever come in here and you weren't here at some point.
Yeah.
Where it was just like... And you really got to fucking live your business, you know?
You do. You got to live your business. But at the same time, it kind of sounds like not so great when you tell people you're living here all the time. But you are.
That's a business.
It is a business.
Being a business owner.
It's a business. And I've done it 8 years now here. So, like, I got an idea kind of where numbers are. So I can step away. But, you know, it's your business. But the plus side is, like, if I want to go away, I can. I can go away for whatever, but all the problems are going to be my problems, and I got to make sure. Yeah.
So if you're on vacation, you're probably getting hammered with problems.
Yeah, and luckily we've done it long enough where my staff has been here for long enough too. They kind of know things are going to happen in and out, and it makes it a lot easier to work with. But you do get to set your own schedule, but at the same time, you have to motivate yourself to keep doing it, because, you know, I can be like, I don't feel like doing shit.
Yeah,
I could just sit there and watch TV all day long and be like, that's not going to do anything for our pocket or bottom line.
Right.
But, and it is, there is plus sides, you know, you do get to, you know, technically work, you are hanging out at a bar. And,
yeah. And it's fun. And like, dude, you know, people like me pop into town, like we get to hang, get the Ross. And it's an easy catch up where it's like, oh, hey, I don't have to meet you somewhere, or come to my hotel, whatever. It's like, hey, dude, I'll meet you at your bar. Like, it's dope.
And if you got a drinking problem, by the way, it's the best way to stop owning a bar, because you start seeing money at different. You're like, you know what? I'm not going to drink that because I can make more money off selling it.
Exactly.
Right now. So it's a good way to kind of stop.
You don't get high off your own supply.
Nope.
Is what it is.
Nope.
Last question for you here. If you were telling a friend or a family member to and they came to you and said, I want to open a bar, what would your answer be? I just want an honest answer on this.
Friend or family? I'd be
friend,
like,
or family member.
I'd be like, talk to me first and let me see what the fuck you're trying to do.
But then what would be your automatic response? Don't do it. Would it be don't do it?
God damn. Because it's like,
it's tough.
I'm saying don't do it, but I do it. So it's like.
But you, again.
It'd be like telling somebody not to be an actor, but then, like, how do you tell somebody not to do something they want to do?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I'm
but
like.
It would have to be something you absolutely
if
love.
If you
want to
do
life,
it,
right?
Yeah. I'm like, yeah. If you're just doing it just to be like. I just think I'm going to get really fucking rich and be like, then be like, go do something else.
Yeah.
If you think you're going to do it because, like, I really want to do this and it's, you know.
And you're in it for the long haul.
And you're in it for the long haul, then, you know, good luck.
Yeah.
Call me if you have questions because it's a roller coaster. But, I mean.
Well, because the reason I asked this question, because I get it on the acting side all the time. I was like, dude, you've done a lot and it's amazing and whatever. I want to be an actor. And they ask, you know, should I do it? I say no.
You say no?
I do. And I'm because if I figure this, if they want it bad enough, they'll go out and do it on their own. But are your chances high of making it?
No.
No, they're not. Same with a bar and a restaurant. And so I always lean.
But you do get to reap the reward if you do good.
Yeah,
so at
I
the
know.
Same time,
I
it's
know.
Like, you know, you kind of, you literally, you know, I told somebody this. I never would have gotten this bar, like, if it was me today. With my wife and my child, I would never have taken the risk and done the bar.
No.
I won it.
Yeah.
When I did it, I'm not telling anybody not to do that with a wife or kid, but you really need to think. You do have to account for the failure rate. And,
yeah.
And I think a lot of it is the failure rate is high is because anybody can technically open a bar. Anybody
yes.
can do it.
Yeah.
So it's going to add a lot higher failure rate just because anybody can do it, you know, or anybody can open a restaurant. So just the sheer numbers of people that don't know what they're doing is going to make the success rate really shitty when you
right.
look at the overall number of
right.
it. But at the same time, if you are going to do it and you have like a lot of people counting on you, it needs to be money you could plan on losing. And I always say, don't ever use your own money. Like if I open another place, I'm never going to use my own money
yeah.
ever again.
Same with movies.
Yeah.
Same with movies.
I did that once.
Investors in movies. Yeah.
And there's plenty. So back to like, if you do want to open a bar, find some investors, find people that have money that they can lose and they're not going to like, it's not going to make them lose their life.
Right. They're not going to be killing themselves live on Facebook.
Yeah, like, exactly.
You did this to me, Tim.
Yeah, so.
You did this
you know,
to me.
Because I've had friends that have said, like, you know, hey, I want to give you like $10,000, $15,000. And I know their friends, like, to them, $15,000, $20,000, that's a lot of money. I'm not going to take it from them because I know the risk. There's always a risk with anything you do. Any business you open, there's a risk. You know,
yeah.
I'd hate to say 50-50, but it is. I mean, you know, so.
No, 100%.
So you just got to be smart with the money. And I would find investors and use other people's money that can lose it. And then eventually, as you move forward, if you got something that hit.
Yeah, then you can
sack it
a
little getting
bit.
Rid of yeah. investors, start buying people out.
Yeah.
And then you could start being your own, like. Your own millionaire. But.
Well, kids, you heard it here first from one of the only successful bar owners in Los Angeles, Mr. Tim Retley. This is the point of the show. We get to the revolutionary figure of the week. This one goes out to you. This one's called the White Horse Tavern, Rhode Island. It was founded in 1673. It is the oldest bar in the United States. There it is.
Nice.
That's for you. There's a White Horse Tavern in Newport, Rhode Island. So if you're there, you want to go to the oldest bar in America, boom.
I didn't know that was there.
I didn't either.
Let's go to Rhode Island.
Yeah, let's go to Rhode Island and figure it out.
How many generations do you think owns that?
Oh, God. How many generations have puked in that place? You know?
I bet they got some stories.
Oh, yeah. I wonder if it's still open.
So it's been going on. Well, we have like 400 years. So.
Yeah. It's just a basement.
The 17th
century. It's just
century.
An old basement. Yeah, with a cooler of piss-warm red stripes. And they're like, here, take it.
It's awesome.
We're the oldest bar in the United States.
Fuck off.
We're the oldest bar in the United States. We're the best there is. Tim, thanks for being on the show, man.
Thank you, man.
It was fucking awesome. If you're in the Los Angeles area and you're looking for an awesome, trendy dive bar with great food and actually drinks that are under $80 a piece, come to the Rec Room in Studio City. You will not regret it. It's my favorite bar in Los Angeles. Appreciate being on the show.
Awesome. Thank you.